While Michael Cohen's testimony was happening in D.C., President Trump was meeting with Kim Jong-un in Vietnam to discuss nuclear disarmament. Trump left without making a deal. And that's not all that's been happening this week. Vice President Mike Pence was in Colombia, where he announced new sanctions on Venezuela. Jared Kushner has been on a Middle East tour in the midst of a scandal about his security clearance. Plus, the U.S. and Chinese officials are still negotiating a trade deal. To make sense of this, I checked in with Susan Glasser, a staff writer at The New Yorker who covers foreign affairs.
There's a feeling, in a way, that the world is almost on fire at the moment. You know, you could add Brexit heading towards a monumental moment in this where they might just be headed over the cliff with no plan. You could talk about Israel, where a key pillar of President Trump's foreign policy, of course, in the region, where the longtime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is just indicted right before the election. You could talk about a nuclear confrontation between India and Pakistan. All of these things, by the way, that in the past the United States would have been right in the middle of. This was almost the definition of American leadership over the last few decades, was that, you know, the U.S. would be involved in trying to smooth things over for its allies, in trying to resolve a nuclear confrontation, in trying to help the European Union and the U.K. negotiate something that didn't wreak havoc on global economic markets. And of course, the United States is absent. Now, you mentioned Venezuela crisis, where Vice President Pence is essentially intervening this week, going to Colombia on the border in an increasingly tense standoff. You know, you have Vietnam, the president, disastrous failed summit. We can talk more about that. China, the trade deal, where it looks like the big questions are whether Trump may accept a deal that people think is not really worth all of the trade war hullabaloo.
What do you think happened in Vietnam? I mean, there was a very abrupt end to that meeting. There was lunch literally left on the table, and the president got on to Air Force One hours before he was expected to leave. Do we know why it fell apart that quickly?
Well, one thing that's been striking to me as the reports emerge of what was going on behind the scenes a little bit is that the North Koreans did something very unusual. They had a middle-of-the-night press conference. They're not big on press conferences, obviously, in the totalitarian state of North Korea, had a press conference and essentially rebutted, said President Trump is lying about the reason for the breakdown. And according to the Associated Press, the North Korean account seems to be more accurate than that offered by the United States. Trump claimed that they wanted full sanctions relief in exchange for shutting down a key nuclear facility. The North Koreans say that's not true. They wanted partial sanctions relief, which, by the way, was the deal that was publicly on offer the whole time, too.
Right. So where does this leave the U.S. then?
It's hard to imagine that President Trump is going to be eager to do a third round of public high-profile negotiations with Kim, given the embarrassment that this one has left. However, there is an argument in terms of negotiating that it was not a terrible thing at all for President Trump to have walked away from a bad deal, in the sense that, number one, he shows that he's not so desperate for a deal that he will take anything. And that can be useful in future negotiations with the North Koreans or with the Chinese or with any other international negotiators, right? Number two, however, I don't think the United States is much closer than before to resolution of the North Korean nuclear problem, which is one of the longest running, most significant geopolitical standoffs right now. There's a report I saw that, in fact, North Korea has managed to produce enough material for 8 additional nuclear bombs in just the time between the Singapore summit and the Hanoi summit.
So literally, things have gotten worse between the first and the second summit in terms of the nuclear capacity of North Korea.
In terms of the nuclear capacity, there's no question. The U.S. intelligence estimates as well have suggested that work has continued to a significant degree on the nuclear weapons complex in North Korea. Now, is it worse overall? I don't think so, and I don't think most experts think so, right? It's certainly better for the U.S. and North Korea to have been talking for all this time than to have been in a state of potential armed confrontation.
It's really, as you have written about before, it's how the president interacts personally with these leaders and where flattery plays a significant role in determining where our foreign policy goes.
Well, that's right. And I think that's so significant because it doesn't really work. If you look at this North Korea summit, it's almost a case study in why flattery just doesn't override national interests. And the Kim regime, for three generations, has pursued nuclear weapons as the cornerstone of their national security policy. Do you really think he's going to throw that all away because Donald Trump said some suck-up-y words to him?
It does not seem to be the case.
No, it does not.
I want to turn to the Middle East for a second. The president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, was in the Middle East this week, notably met with MBS in Saudi Arabia. But then the news came out that the security clearance for Kushner came at the direction of President Trump. Tell me what you think the fallout is for this. Obviously, the president has discretion. He can decide who gets a security clearance, even if the powers that be within the security community say that they have questions or they have a hesitancy. So how big of a deal is it that the president decided to use this influence and has tapped Kushner to be his Middle East envoy?
Well, that's right. So there are a couple things I would say. First of all, you're right. The president has the power to do this. No one questions that. If so, why did he lie about it? Why did Ivanka Trump lie about it just a few weeks ago in a television interview? Why did Jared Kushner's lawyer, Abby Lowell, go to extreme lengths to apparently mislead or flat out lie to reporters about this? That's the question, right? Why didn't President Trump simply acknowledge a decision that he had made? His own chief of staff and White House counsel were not only opposed to it, but apparently wrote memos for the files chronicling their opposition and the fact that the professionals had recommended against it. So I think it's a disturbing example of the lack of process in the White House combined with what we can all see is almost a chronic culture of deception and misleading the American people about presidential decisions. So that's, I think, where there's real cause for concern. In terms of international diplomacy, as it was, tapping your inexperienced 30-something son-in-law to make Middle East peace where so many have failed before you was always an act of monumental hubris on the part of President Trump. He doesn't mention so much anymore what he said when he came into office 2 years ago, which is, oh, maybe Middle East peace is not as hard as it's cooked up to be. Obviously, that has not proven to be the case. This vaunted peace plan has been about 4 to 6 weeks away from being released by Jared Kushner for the last 2 years.
Right. And now, of course, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, it looks as if he will be indicted. So that seems to have an impact as well.
Absolutely. You know, the Trump administration and the Netanyahu government in Israel have fused in a way that we have really never seen before, even though, of course, the United States and Israel have been allies and partners for a long time. Netanyahu's campaign, in fact, has been premised around his closeness to Donald Trump. There are gigantic billboard-sized pictures of Trump and Netanyahu running on the side of buildings in Tel Aviv. A conference in Warsaw put on by the U.S. Secretary of State just 2 weeks ago was essentially part of the Netanyahu campaign platform, where he brought the Prime Minister of Israel there to appear along with Arab foreign ministers in a way that they have not agreed to do in a long time. And this peace plan rollout was potentially going to be a part, essentially, of Netanyahu's platform to his country. So I think that's all very much up in the air now.
Right. I want to go back to something we talked about at the very beginning about, you know, America's role now in the world as we see all these crises flaring up, whether it's in Venezuela, India, Pakistan, Israel, et cetera, and the fact that the U.S. seems to be pulling back. Do you think that should something really flare up in a significant way, let's say India, Pakistan, that the U.S. is prepared to deal, that our government's prepared to deal, that our State Department is prepared to deal with some like serious hot things?
I think that's the question that has really been raised over the last few years. And you could argue that this is a longer-term trend, the relative decline of American power and leadership in the world, the rise of China and other powers is certainly not something that just happened in the 2 years of President Trump. But of course, what's striking now is because of really the disorganization and disarray inside U.S. government, so many positions unfilled. By the way, we don't even have an ambassador to Pakistan right now. You know, that further reduces America's ability to lead, even if it had the willingness. And then, of course, you have the ideology of President Trump, which is a stark departure in foreign policy terms from recent presidents of both political parties, who have all essentially been what I would call liberal internationalists. Donald Trump is not that. He is not someone who believes in the exercise of American power in that way. And he has essentially called into question our relationships with most of our close allies in the world. He, as you know, against the kind of multilateral, painstaking, coalition-based diplomacy that essentially the United States has pursued around the world since the end of the Cold War.
Susan Glasser is a staff writer for The New Yorker.